Good Sunday morning, Jacksonville. It's WOKV's Josh McCarthy, and welcome to Hard Workout with Pete the Job Guy Langlois. This show is here to give you free career advice and insight on the latest employment trends from the staffing industry's leading authority, Pete the Job Guy Langlois. With over 30 years of experience in staffing, we invite you to join the discussion on workplace controversies with an honest and entertaining filter. Take it away, Pete.
You hard workers out there, good Sunday morning. I hope you're ready to have a great, big, fun-filled day. You know, some people ask me, hard worker, and then hard worker. I talk with an accent. I'm originally from Massachusetts, but some of my friends said, listen, I hear you, Pete, on the radio, and you're pronouncing your R's, and you're not saying hard worker. It's true. I've been in Duval, 904. I've been in Jacksonville for 34 years. If you get me angry, then the 617, the Massachusetts comes out. But the origin behind hard worker was, as a kid, you know, the biggest compliment you could give somebody, from a kid from Massachusetts and Tewksbury, the town I grew up in, was that, PETA, he's a hard worker. And, you know, all through my life, I've taken that to heart. I'll tell you a story. When I was a kid, my dad loves to tell this story because he always says, PETA's a hard worker. And we were at the beach. We stayed at the beach for 1 week every summer. And we're in Seabrook, New Hampshire. And while we're there, I'm walking down the street, and this lady says to me, excuse me, son, there's a big sand drift that's blown up against my house. Would you shovel that away for me, and I'll pay you? Okay, I'm there on my summer vacation. I'm having fun with family and friends, and I was like, wow, I can make some money right here. Not only did I shovel all that sand away, I swept her driveway, and as long as she was paying me, I was happy to help and be a hard worker. And my dad talks about that as just one example that I worked hard. You know, I pushed a lawnmower up and down. I would knock on doors in the summer and say, I will mow your lawn for a dollar. And I will go to houses in the winter and say, I will shovel the snow out of your driveway for a dollar. That's what I did. I sold seeds because I saw in the back of a magazine that if I sold a bunch of packages of seeds door to door, I could get a free bow and arrow. And I can promise you, I had a free bow and arrow. It was mailed to me. Probably wasn't the safest thing as a kid to have, but I did this. And I worked hard. I had two paper routes. And when I was 13, I cleaned a canteen truck. You know those trucks that go up to a construction zone, and they're kind of metal, and they open it up, and they sell coffee and sandwiches and soda and such? I got paid $50 cash a week to clean that canteen truck. And meanwhile, I played football, and I wrestled in school, too. So I was kind of a busy kid. You know, when I was 12, I was able to pay cash for a mini bike that enabled me to have that second paper route because I couldn't deliver the Lowell Sun and the town crier walking all around. I had to use that mini bike. But I did that, and I was a hard worker. And then I joined the Navy, and I worked 50-plus hours a week in the Navy. And then when I had duty, I mean, sometimes some other veterans out there know we work 70 hours a week, but we're always on call. But I went to night school. I attended college courses, and it took me 6.5 years to finally get my bachelor's degree, but I graduated with a 338 overall and a 398 in my major. I worked hard because nothing came easy for me. Okay? And all you people out there, it's Sunday morning. You could be sleeping, right? But hard workers do something. They get up early. They get more done in the first probably hour or two in their day than most people do all day. Okay? You're a hard worker. You had your coffee. I know you're ready for today. And I hope today you're going to hear some great stories. You know, I have Aaron Mills. Say hi, Aaron.
Hey, everybody. What's up?
Okay, that's our handy-dandy news reporter, Aaron Mills, that's joining me today. And you know, Aaron, we, over the past few weeks doing the show, we've heard from some great guests, right? Mm-hmm. Is there anybody in particular that stands out the guests that we've had?
Yeah, I would say I definitely loved hearing Lori talk about her funny story. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Lori Day was outstanding. Tell a little bit about the story, and then maybe we'll replay her segment.
Yeah, so she was telling us a story, and it's funny because after she recorded it, she came out and she talked to me, and she was just telling the story again, and she was acting it out, but she was in the middle of an interview, and someone just fell asleep on her in the middle of the interview. And I was like, what did you even do? I wouldn't even know. Hello.
Yeah, and, so, you know, and the good thing is, Lori, when she told that story, she said, if that person would have said, listen, I have a condition or I have an issue or let me explain myself, I had a hard night, you know, but no, this person didn't offer much. And I don't even think the person realized they dozed off. But Lori told that story. You know, there were a few parts about what Lori said, and we'll play that in just a second. But when I think about how she made that analogy that your career is kind of like climbing a rock wall. Sometimes you're climbing to the top, but you know, other times you have to climb back down, maybe go off to the side a little bit to you know, start going back up again. It was a great analogy, and it really hit home. All right, you know what? Let's go ahead. What do you think? Let's replay the Lori Day segment once again.
Yeah, let's do it.
Lori is Senior Vice President and Chief Customer Operations Officer at EverBank. She's also on the Diversity and Inclusion Council, and she serves as the executive sponsor for the Women's Employee Resource Group, Advance. Now, Lori, I know it's safe to say you've been a manager, director, vice president, a leader, and a hiring manager for many years. I won't say how many, but I know it's been a lot more than than 5 years, is that correct?
More than five would be correct, more like decades.
Okay.
We'll leave it there.
All right, great. Well, and throughout your career, you've been pretty passionate about helping people. You've been a career coach, mentor, and very involved in the community, isn't that right?
Yes, I would. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, all right. Well, I think it's safe to say that. What I want to know now is, as a leader and a hiring manager, and I know you've interviewed, I don't even want to put a number to it, but I know there's a lot of zero. You've interviewed a lot of people. And what's important to you is not just hiring, it's retaining the top talent that you've hired. And I know that's safe to say that you've retained thousands of employees over your years. I want to focus on your interviewing techniques right now. Without getting into too many specifics, what kinds of questions do you ask in an interview? And what types of answers are you looking for that help you make your decisions?
So I think part of the interview process of questions, answers, is really around how am I able to help someone paint their story for me. It used to be back in the day where the standard questions are, tell me your strengths, tell me your weaknesses, what are the things you're most proud of? And those just don't help create the environment that gives me a forward look on how someone will be successful with my team. So instead, I ask questions about the job requirements and the competencies that accompany that. And I ask a candidate to paint a picture by telling me examples of times where they've had experiences in certain things. And when asked to share their examples with me, I'm really looking for them to show me who they are, what they've done, how they've interacted with other people, how they've used different skills to achieve things and solve problems. If they can paint that picture for me of an experience they've had in their past, then I'm able to see in the future how they could fit in my organization.
Outstanding. And Lori, if they begin to answer their questions with, oh, well, I always do this, or this is what I would do. Okay,
yeah.
One's hypothetical and one is speaking in generalities. Well, how's that going to work out for
them? That's really not working out for me. But I will ask the question again. And the term is behavior-based interviewing is kind of the buzzword or the term, and it really is about understanding others' behaviors. So when I ask for a candidate to give me an example, and the answer is, well, I typically or I usually or then I'll say, that's great to hear. Can you give me an example of when you did that and what the circumstances are? And if we still can't get there, maybe after a couple of times, then we'll change the topic. But I'll still go back to wanting to see, by example, stories that the candidate can share with me, their stories of where they've been successful, where they've had challenges. And if we can't get there, then honestly, that's not someone that I'm going to feel confident will be successful in a role on my team.
Right. And for example, if you ask a prospective manager, tell me about an experience where you've dealt with a difficult employee and how you handled it and how you mm-hmm. resolved it. And if they say, oh, well, I always make sure that I tell them that they should do this, or, you know, without that specific example, and they keep speaking in generalities, could that potentially be a showstopper or demonstrate to you that they don't have that specific experience?
That's going to be the question in my mind. Do they really have the experience that I need to be mm-hmm. successful, not only for my team, but for them? Will they be in a role that they truly can achieve and be strong at? And if they can't demonstrate that they've had examples in their past that correlate to what the job is I'm hiring for, then it does add a lot of question in my hiring decisions.
At EverBank, you interview someone. Do you expect the candidates to know anything about EverBank walking through the door?
I do. I really do, because to me, if someone is focused on a job and they want the job, I want to understand why. So do they want the job because this is the perfect role that they've always been looking for, regardless of the company? That's good to know. It's authentic. But if they are running from something that they're at now versus running towards the position in the company that I'm part of, that's important to know. If someone's running towards something, they're going to want to be prepared. Being prepared is able to know how to correlate the company's vision and mission. And that's pretty available. If you go and Google a company, whether it's mine or somebody else's, you can find out a lot by not only looking at the company website, you can look at reviews, and being able to articulate the candidate's skills and their abilities and parlay that into the company itself shows not only have they done their homework, but they care. If they care, then that says they're going to care about my customers. They're going to care about their teammates. And that is really important.
For when you review resumes, should the resumes be customized or tailored for the position, or should people just write one resume and send it out to all prospective employers?
In today's environment, it's so vital to have specific, unique resumes that paint the picture the candidate wants to paint. If they want to paint a picture that one size fits all, then of course they can do that. But I will tell you, most major companies have a screening process because of the volume of candidates coming through the door. So a machine is actually going to take the words on the paper that has the job description, and they will run it against the words that are on the candidate's resume. If those words don't match up or have themes that match up, that candidate may never get a chance for me to see them. And if I don't get a chance to see them, then I won't know what a great job they could do for me. And so it's important to write your resume where you're keyed into not only the performance objectives, but what are the behaviors, what are the competencies that this job is looking for, and be able to paint that picture all along the candidate's process, albeit their cover letter, the resume, when they're sitting across from someone or doing a phone interview, and most importantly, when they write their follow-up thank you. That's perhaps shows my decades in business, but it's something I think is vitally important, is to say thanks.
I'm glad you just said that about the follow-up letter, because it just goes right into my next question that I have for you. Does a shoe shine and a handshake still mean something for a prospective employer, meaning that first impression, looking sharp, arriving on time, which seems to be a little bit difficult for people now? Does that all still matter?
It does matter. It goes back to what I was talking about a minute ago about caring. So if you're doing the research and you're demonstrating you care, you also show that you care by taking the time, looking the part, being present and engaged, and making that first impression, and that is eye contact, what you're wearing, how you're presenting yourself. It shows that, again, you care about the impression you're making, you care about the job that you want, and you'll care about then my customers and teammates going forward. So to me, it's vital.
You know, And I want all the listeners here to keep in mind that this isn't someone whose career it is to give tips to you. This is the person you sit across from when you interview. She's doing this to help you. She's taking time out of a very busy schedule to tell you what she keys in on. And I'm going to tell you, she's not unlike many employers out there. You know, there's a big, there's a lot of folks out there that have a lot of work experience. They have 15 years maybe at a company, and to them, they think it's old hat. And they might not have updated their resume. And diving in and interviewing again, it's a foreign concept, you know? What do you say to that person who hasn't interviewed in so long? It's all new to them. They come and they sit across from you. They're probably going to be nervous a little bit, just as much as the newbie. What do you say to this person who's in a career transition?
Well, for the person who's in a career transition, what I would say first is I hope you've always been a networker. Even if you've not been in a job search perspective before, you don't want to build a network when you need a network. You truly should be engaging with people, helping them understand who you are, what you do, and being able to help them along the way. So when you are ready to start a career search or a reset, that you've got a network to go to. If you don't have a network, and you're finding yourself in a situation where you haven't had to interview for a job or go look for a job before, I would suggest that you really spend some time with whether it's a neighbor or a formal coach or someone where you can just practice. Being a little nervous, again, it kind of shows you care, but you don't want the nerves to be so stifling to your information, right? You don't want to put yourself in a situation where you can't communicate the great things you can do because you can't get the words out. And one of the best ways, I think, to be able to get the words out and have the nerves be at bay is someone should be thinking about four or five scenarios or stories that are in their pocket. They know the detail and they can apply that story or scenario to just about any of the behavior-based questions. So if someone says, tell me about a time where you had a particularly difficult situation with a peer, that same story might also be one that you could articulate how you had a very successful outcome in a challenging situation, whether it's specific to the peer relationship or problem solving. But if you have your stories, you know your details, and you can know where they are applied, you suddenly don't have to worry about what you're going to say. Now you're thinking about when you're going to say it and show that you can be a valued player in this new organization.
Great advice. Lori, I had a hiring manager tell me one time, if someone shows up to the interview with sunglasses on their head, or they're chewing gum, that's a showstopper right there. They're out. I discontinue the interview and show them the door. Now, I think that's really harsh, okay?
Yeah.
Are there any showstoppers for you, or are there any pet peeves or some things that you might want to just tell people that they wouldn't normally consider that might, common sense for whatever reason, doesn't click on with some people? What would you say?
So I would like to give everyone an opportunity to show their best. And so I don't know if I would say that's a showstopper, but I'll tell you a funny story. I interviewed someone that was great credentials on paper. And when they came to me, we were having the conversation and they fell asleep while we were having the conversation face to face in the interview. And so, sorry, that was my showstopper. And maybe there was reason for it. I'm sure there was. But that was just left. There was no explanation. And if someone recognized and said, hey, look, you know, I think I need to apologize because I probably wasn't as attentive as I hoped to be. Last night I had something go on. I'd feel like, wow, they were authentic. They recognized that was probably not their best forward foot, but was able to recover by explaining it. This situation, they just like fell asleep. It was hilarious, but it was kind of bizarre too. Yeah. So, you know, there's always those human interactions that will give you a laugh. They'll surprise you in all kinds of ways, but I don't know if there's other showstoppers that would would prevent me from at least exploring the person who was interested in the job I had, besides falling asleep.
I always say, you know, some people say work hard, play hard. Well, if you go out and hoot with the owls at night, you better be ready to soar with the eagles in the morning is what I say. You need to answer the buzzer, check your bags at the door,
right,
and be ready for that bell. Lori, I know at Everbank, you know, you may have some open positions. It's a large company. And what I'd like to know is, do you have anything very specific you can tell our listeners that you're hiring for? Maybe not you personally, but at your organization. Is there anything that maybe one of our listeners will say, holy cow, I have that exact skill set? What is that?
Well, there are numerous positions that are posted every day. If you go to the career section of our website, which is everbank.com, soon to be TIAA Bank, mm-hmm. you'll see those positions. But selfishly, I'm going to take this opportunity to let you know that there is a position. It's not in my organization, but it supports my organization. And it requires some pretty specific skills that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of the listeners happen to have experience with workforce management and capacity planning, there is a workforce management analyst position that is open right now. And if those skills are something that fits your resume and you'd like to apply, I can share even the requisition number. So again, you go to the career site, and if you look for workforce management analyst, and the ID number for that job is actually 1-800-6342. So that might be something, if your listeners have those specific skills, we'd love to understand if there's a fit.
Outstanding. If there's an analyst out there with those specific skill sets, that's a destination employer. That's a hot job that's open right now. And Lori just instructed you exactly how to get there and how to apply for that job. Lori, it's been my pleasure having you here today. Any parting thoughts?
Parting thoughts would be, again, with the workforce that is being deployed today in all kinds of environments, I would encourage those to think about all varieties of roles. So whether it's technical skills or human relation type skills, there's virtual leadership capabilities as well. And to not think about one position necessarily as being a destiny, I would consider that your career is more like a jungle gym or a rock climbing wall. You don't go straight up like a ladder. And so sometimes if you think about your rock climbing wall, you may have to move to the side to be able to reach up to the next level. You may have to move down a little bit so you can have sure footing. And I think that in today's environment, with so much digital landscape and so many different opportunities to work nationally, locally, globally, virtually, whatever illy you want to put in there. It's I just think to look broadly and think about those transferable skills. It's not necessarily just being a specialist, but how can you become a generalist in things that are problem solving, collaboration, teamwork, strategy? Those type of things would be transferable in just about any industry. So I'd encourage folks out there to think about the rock wall, the jungle gym, and maybe put the ladder aside.
Boy, those are true words. Lori Day, thank you very much for joining us today, and we will be right back. Welcome back, all you hard workers. It's Pete the Job Guy right here, and with me is our Pete the Job Guy, economic news reporter, the world-famous Aaron Mills. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, everyone.
Aaron, you know, people ask me, who is this Aaron? What's she about? She's the news reporter. Give us a little bio.
Tell me about your background.
Yes, I'm making you do it.
Yeah, okay, so my background, I'm helping Pete with some content marketing, and in my free time, I'm a full-time mama. So just like Brandy, and that's just about me.
The way I describe you is she should wear a cape because she flies all around the office. She's super at what she does, and I couldn't do this without her. Thank you very much, Erin.
Thank you, Pete.
You know, let's talk. Really we heard Lori in the first part of the segment. That was one of my favorite ones. Her advice is fantastic. You know, whether you're a job seeker or you're looking for that next step, the promotion, we all have a career in here. I say it all the time. Everybody works. There's only a few trust fund babies out there, and I haven't met one, you know, in my whole life. So we're all out there. We're working hard. Her advice as an employer, I mean, she's the person you sit across from when you're going to interview, and her tips were just, they were just fantastic.
They really were.
Who else sticks out from some of the guests that we've had?
Let me think. I think Alex Stuckey was really good. two big quotes that I just brought home. He really should trademark them because I feel like Nike is going to steal one of them. One of them says, "Dreams and goals are free. The hustle, that is sold separately."
Oh, you got that right. Think about
that. Yeah, trademark that one,
Alex. Right, because we all have wants. We all have goals, right? And it's free to set them. But you got to pay a price to actually achieve them. That was outstanding. What else?
Yeah, and then that other quote he said in there, he should just be on that motivational poster that you hang with the eagle soaring. And this one says, "You can't have a comeback unless you have a setback."
Oh, you know, that is, when you think about Alex's story, and I remember because he told it, and Alex Stuckey, you know, CEO, I mean, just a very, very accomplished, successful individual. And his career had the setbacks. It had the lows. And he intentionally took a step back to take a step forward. You know what? I think all our listeners could benefit from hearing that segment once again. Let's replay the Alex Stuckey.
One more time.
Our next guest is Alex Stuckey. A lot of people in Jacksonville, business folks, know who Alex is. Alex was once voted the CEO of the year for Jacksonville Business Journal. What I want to tell you about Alex is I know his journey firsthand, okay? Alex is someone that was successful early in his career, after graduating college, and he was a banker, and he was a successful banker, making a lot of money as a banker, as a young person, but it wasn't his ultimate goal. Alex is an entrepreneur. He had to take a serious step backwards to take a step forward. And for those of you that listen to the show regularly, we a lot of times use the analogy that your career is like climbing a rock wall. And I thank Lori Day for sharing that with us. And, you know, sometimes you're climbing up, up, up to reach the top. But then all of a sudden you have to climb back down a little bit and even to the side. You take a few steps backwards in order to move up the ladder again or climb up that rock wall again. Well, Alex has done just that. Before we get into your work story, Alex, tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe your childhood and kind of what made your gears turn this way.
Well, Pete, as we've discussed many times, I grew up on a farm about an hour and a half west of here in Lake City. We call it the Big City. And so I grew up on a thoroughbred racehorse farm.
Isn't that over by Live Oak, the big city of Live Oak? Okay, good.
Yeah, the other big city. So I grew up over there on a thoroughbred farm, and we did the typical. We broke and raised and trained racehorses, and we cut hay and had 60 acres of hay. And so,
farm boy strong. Yeah, out there working hard on a farm. What were some of the things you did?
Well, all the glory stuff like mucking stalls and washing tack and cleaning horses.
But it's hard work, right?
Hard work every day.
And, you know, your dad, what did your dad do? He was an entrepreneur, right?
Sure. My dad and his dad before him were horse trainers. So they always had their own business. They operated the training of racehorses for their whole life. So, you know, they were always entrepreneurs and never had a job. And other than that, I mean, obviously that's a hard work and hard job, but there's no breaks, right? Horses don't go on vacation. They have to eat every day. They have to train every day. So there's no breaks. And, you know, so it kind of, what leaned on me was my dad saying, you need to go work for a big company because they have pensions and they have 401ks and you get vacation time. And these are the kinds of things that he saw from his friends that worked regular, we'll call it regular jobs. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of pushed me that way. And I can tell you that's how I ended up at the bank when I graduated instead of training racehorses.
So you're at the bank earning a good income. And then slam, you go to eating ketchup sandwiches for a while. What's that all about? Walk me through that.
Yeah, so I can tell you, the most impactful thing that ever happened in my career was my mentor at the bank. He had been CEO of the bank in Lake City, and he had been with Barnett for 45 years, and they terminated him after 45-year career. And I didn't want to be a part of that. I didn't want to be with a company where you're there, you give your lifeblood for a long period of time, and then you're gone. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to live and die by my own sword. And so I left and went and started Firefighters.
And you know, without getting into too many specifics, the journey, you know, you don't just walk out and say, okay, I'm going to run a fire, you know, extinguisher and firefighting equipment type of thing. It's a journey. Like, if I'm going to be an electrician, I have to be a journeyman for a while, okay, before I become a master electrician and pass my tests. You had to go out and be a career journeyman, stepping off a pretty healthy salary for a relatively young man to basically nothing.
Oh, yeah. That was a difficult time financially, obviously, and for your pride, too. I mean, you know, you can't have a comeback unless you have a setback. And sometimes these setbacks, you have to personally create them yourself. You have to say, I am going to take this step back intentionally so that I can have a comeback. And nobody comes back and thinks the tie is the win, right? You just don't. Other than Bobby Bowden, my favorite story of Bobby Bowden. I just thought about it.
Tell it.
Yeah, so Florida State game, and it's, you know, the greatest win ever, Bobby claims, in his career, and it was a tie. They were down 4 touchdowns. They come back in the fourth quarter, and he had an opportunity there at the goal line to go for it and win with the 2-point conversion or kick the field goal and tie, and he chose to tie. But nobody does that, right? We want to come back to win, right? So that's the thing. When you make that personal choice to make a step back, it's not to come back to be even. It's to come back and be way ahead. And so, yeah, I made that choice. And one of the embarrassing moments, I guess it wasn't embarrassing, one of the moments in time that make you really test your mettle was, mm-hmm, I was walking through at then the Barnett Bank,
yeah,
and I was servicing the fire extinguishers, mm-hmm, and I was a one-person company. And
now you're a one-person company, yep, coming in to do the extinguishers at your old employer.
Yep, at my old employer in the big fancy building with the fancy offices, and somebody goes, Stucky, is that you? And I'm scuttling off, right? Yeah, trying to get around the corner, and I turn around and it's Mike, and a friend of mine from college and since then at the bank, and I turn around and I say, yeah, it's me, and I come back and I'm wearing the uniform with my name on it, and I go sit down at his desk, and he's wearing suit and tie like we all back did, you know? And he says, I thought you were going to start your own company and own a business, and I'm like, and this is what it looks like.
This is an entrepreneur for you. You know, you built it into something special. You built it very big. I know you actually sold it, and it was a very good event for you and your family and everything. It's a fantastic story. Let me ask you this. Here's the big question. Are you a hard worker?
Pete, you don't get to where you got, and you don't get to where I've got without being a hard worker, right? Hard work is where it's at. I listened to your doctor a little earlier today, and I can tell you that struck home with me when he talked about, you know, Thursday night when everybody else was partying at the university, he was working. And that strikes a chord, because you know what? Hard work as a child, hard work as an adult, you know, it is about hard work. You know, I love your theme about the hustle. And the reason why is because people talk about dreams and they talk about goals, but in real life, those are free. Dreams and goals are free. The hustle, that's sold separately. You've got to bust it every day.
You know, I think about that a lot, because we all want. right? And you can put X at the end. We all want X. We want bigger. We want more. We want a promotion. We want an increase in pay. We want a better title. Or we all want. We have workforce wants. But it's the space in between the want and the goal. When you think about your desired performance, when I think about employees, the desired performance I want out of my employees and the actual performance I get, there's a gap in there. Mm-hmm. And I always look, how do I fill in the gaps? And when I look as a hard worker, it's one thing to work really, really hard, but not have a goal or a destination in mind. You're just spinning your wheel. You're that gerbil or the hamster on the wheel moving around. But hard work towards a goal gets you there every time. And you're right. You would not be where you're at now if you didn't have all that hard work. But once you get it, once you get have a level of success, do you let your foot off the gas?
If you want to go flat or down, right? If you're not growing, you're sinking. And so, you know, it was one of the really neat experiences I had was when we made the top 50 fastest growing, and we made it every year, 10 years in a row, and just had incredible success. And you know, it was everybody around you doing the work, right? Including yourself. But one of the things they asked was, how do you know when you've put in enough time for the day, right? How do you know, right? Because some people work 8 hours, 10 hours, some people work crazy hours. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, here's how I tell. When I close up at the end of the night and I think I'm done for the day, I drive by my competitors. And if they're there, I haven't done enough work today. I go back to work.
Boy, that drives it home right there. You have to do more than your competitors in order to win, I think is the point I'm trying to make. And that drives it home. And, you know, I know as a leader, okay, to me, being consistent, and, you know, some people say you have to lead by example, right? I take that to heart. I always set the pace. You know, a lot of the folks that work alongside me and have for many years, I don't ask them to do anything that I can't or won't do on a consistent basis. And consistency is important from a leader. I had a boss one time, and I'll tell you this, Alex. If he walked in the room with a newspaper under his arm, I didn't know if he was going to read it to me or hit me over the head with it. It just depends on what his night happened last night or what was going on in his personal life. The consistency wasn't there. And he certainly didn't set the example. I want to work for somebody that can do what I do as good or better than me. And I don't care if he did it 20 years ago or 20 minutes ago. I want him to show me that he or she can still do it and do it well. What do you think of that?
I think that's exactly right. I think that is spot on, because I wouldn't do a job. I wouldn't ask a person to do a job that I wasn't willing, able, and capable of doing myself. And that was, you know, one of the things our customers would always ask us. They would say, oh, well, you clean our hoods. You know, you're already in here doing the hoods and doing the fire system, and you're already up there monkeying around. Can you go ahead and clean them too? And I'd say, no. And they said, well, why not? You know, I said, because I don't want to do that work. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not going to do that work, I'm not going to ask another person to do that work either.
Great, great. That's a great point. Let's talk about right now. One of the companies that are under your charge as the Chief Administrative Officer of GEE Group is Scribe Solutions, based right here in Jacksonville. Tell me a little bit about that company.
Sure, that's an awesome company. It provides scribes, which are basically assistants to the doctors. And in the world of medicine today, and your doctor earlier when I had a conversation about it, and one of the things he said was really interesting, and he said, I want to be a doctor. All of my friends that are doctors, they want to provide good medicine to patients. That's what they love. But a part of this new medical field is you have to fill out massive amounts of paperwork, forms, and they call it EMR, electronic medical records. And you would think, oh, it's electronic, so it's simple and it's going to be easy, but it's not. They have to go in and they have to fill out this massive amount of data, every single patient, over and over and over again. And there's some solutions out there, such as Dragon, which is the little microphone.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the Dragon software. Exactly. You talk into it and it transcribes things. That's but true. I have that. And you should see some of the mumbo-jumbo. And I had to say set my words, my voice to it, so it recognized my personal voice. And, you know, even though, you know, I kind of have a nasally Bostonian type accent, it's supposed to adjust to it, but it still has mumbo jumbo. Not only do I have to talk into it, then I have to proofread it for a bunch of time.
Right. And that's the same thing in the medical field. And can you imagine when you have all these massive words that they have to use describing diseases and ailments and medicines that are going on, how many mistakes are going to be made? So there's a lot of time and effort in fixing that. So a scribe stands in the room with the doctor and allows the doctor to do their job, have patient interaction, be right there, eyeball to eyeball, talking with the patient and giving that personal care. And at the same time, the scribe is taking all the information and all the data down and writing it up and putting it in the proper forms on the EMR. And so it's a great opportunity. But you know what? What's even better, it's not that it just fills out the forms, but now you have a personal assistant that gets the radiology reports, make sure that you're seeing the patient that you left about 15 minutes ago that needs to be re-seen again. There's a lot of other things that a scribe does that really assist a doctor and allows them to do what Mark said earlier.
What do you look for in a scribe? What's your candidate pool for folks that want to be scribes?
So obviously with Scribe Solutions, we want to differentiate ourselves. And so to differentiate ourselves from our competitors, we want to put a better product on the field. And to do that, what we do is we look for people that want to be the next physician, the next doctor, the next nurse, the next pharmacist, the next medical provider, even if it's going to be in administration and running a hospital. That's what we look for.
It almost like they'll get the exposure that they need. They get to see the people that they want to be, perhaps, or they're picking up things. Maybe they decide this isn't the career path they want to go in, but they're talking the language day in and day out. Are these college students that might be in a medical field? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. 95% of all of ours are college students. And so the reason why, you picked up on it, and that's perfect. Not only do we find those folks that are looking at that as their career, that's what they think they're going to be, and it does vet some out, right? They go through it and they say, oh, yeah, this is not for me, right?
And I've seen enough.
Done with that. Yeah. So but then the ones that really are committed, you end up with exactly what you had here earlier, somebody that wants to be in medicine. And so they are going to work on Christmas. They're going to work on New Year's. All the holidays are going to get covered by scribes. And that's what allows us to put a totally different product on the field than everybody else because of the commitment level to be there all the time.
Fantastic. You know, I had no idea. I didn't even know this was a position. Let me ask you this now. Who's your target? Is it going right to doctors? Is it doctor's office? Is it emergency physician services? Or who are the folks that we can direct to your website?
Sure. So the primary thing that we look for, and it's only because, you know, I'm a little greedy here, is that we want the most you can get. So when you look at an emergency department, there's a lot of doctors there. There's a lot of hours. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that's our primary, would be an emergency department. Mm-hmm. Secondary and tertiary would be large clinics, right? We do a lot of clinics like orthopedic clinics, cardiovascular clinics. These are the types of places where you have 20, 30, 40 doctors. But again, with those, you're only putting in about 12 hours a day. So we like the high volume of the emergency department, but a large clinic is also a big target.
Are you equipped to 20, 30, 40, 50? I don't know what your scalability is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a lot of large clinics all over the Southeast, and we have a lot of large emergency departments over the Southeast as well. So we're equipped to, if you came in today and said, I've got 70 physicians and we would like to put a program in place, what we would do is we would give you two options. Right? The try before you buy, where we come out and do a trial and send out some scribes and you do the trial and see if you like it. And if that works out great, then we start filling your shifts up by doctor. And then we also have a program that we rolled out last year, which is you own your own scribe program. We hire them, train them, put them in place, vet them, and then you, it's your program, you own it, and then you just call us back when you need fills.
Well, that's fantastic. You're flexible. It sounds like a great service you're providing. If I'm one of these entities that wants to get a hold of you, or I'm potentially want to be a scribe, how do I reach Scribe Solutions here in Jacksonville? Is there a website? Is there a phone number that they can reach?
Absolutely. So they would reach out to Jamie Michaud. Jamie runs the Scribe Solutions business, and her number is area code 904-512-7505. Again, that's 512-7505. And you could also reach her by email at hr@scribesolutions.com.
All right, and let me ask you one final question here, okay? How are the Jaguars going to do this year?
Oh, my goodness. I hope they take it home next year.
And if you're going to catch a redfish in the Intercoastal, I asked Dr. Anderson this earlier, and he gave us a whole doggone update. I'm asking you, mud minnows or shrimp? That's all I'm asking. I don't need the top water and a full Captain Anderson report. Mud minnows, shrimp, or shrimp, and why?
Marker 32.
Love it. Oh, that cracked me up when he said marker 32, because I know Alex is a fisherman. He's an outdoorsman. I know that about him. But when I'm asking him what to use for bait, he talks about his favorite seafood restaurant, marker 32, right over there in Beach Boulevard. I know it well. It's delicious, but that cracked me up. Alex's story of perseverance and hard work, that's somebody that, you know, has been through it all. And it really resonated. You can't have a comeback without a setback. And some of the other things you mentioned, Aaron. But, you know, I loved that segment. I'm glad we played it again. I'm sure you are, too.
Yeah, I love hearing that again and again and again. It's really good motivational advice.
Good. Well, all right, hard workers. Again, it's Sunday morning, and all of you got to listen to this show. I hope that you got a nugget out of here. I hope that you heard something that you say, you know what? I'm going to apply that in my everyday life. I'm going to do something differently as the result of this hour that I spent with Pete the Job Guy. And if you commit to doing something differently, then you did a little something more than get entertained, right? You're going to persevere. You're going to work hard. You're going to do some of the things that Lori Day told us from Everbank TIAA. You're going to persevere like Alex Stuckey did. It's exciting. And Aaron and I, woohoo! Can I get a woohoo, Aaron?
Woohoo!
All right. Aaron and I, thank you for joining us here this great Sunday morning on Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy. Please join us every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. If you'd like to be a part of the show, always call us 340-1045, and we'll take those live calls. Send your resumes to Pete at PeteTheJobGuy.com. I really want to collect resumes and put some people to work. If you're an employer in town, and you would like to put somebody to work, or you have a job opening and you'd like to see some of these great resumes that we're getting, just reach out to me. You can reach me at my S&I company's office, 904-713-2550. You can always email me at Pete@PeteTheJobGuy.com. I'm on social media, all those other stuff that do. What else? What, you got me on the Twitter? What else
the
you
Twitter.
Got?
Yeah, he's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're always uploading some fun things on there. You can catch Pete dancing most of the workday.
All right, guys. Have a terrific Sunday, and thank you for joining us on Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy.